living. Hey, we got someone special here today.
Yeah. So Matt is not with us this week. He is off chasing rainbows. But instead, we have a new friend of the show, somebody I met on Instagram, and we've been talking back and forth quite a lot, and I've been digging all the shit that he's been posting. And he's actually the man that's responsible for our video violence episode, that the collab that we did with VHS Doom, which was a fucking riot, man. That was such a good time.
Hell yeah.
But with us is our new friend, Andrew, Mr. Trash Memoirs, Trash _ Memoirs at Instagram. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be here.
It's great to have you, man.
Dude, good suggestion. Video violence was sick.
Oh my God. So good.
One of the best. It's one of my personal favorites.
Hmm. Okay. I think it was like one of the first shot on videos I ever saw too.
Yeah.
It was an opening to a whole new genre that I had never even cracked into.
I have like an urge for us to do just like a whole segment of all like shot on video shit, because there's so much good stuff. The episode that we did on Night Feeders, that was a shot on video, man. Oh man, that movie's so good too.
And there's so many out there that that you don't even, every time I think that I've seen them all, There's like 10 more that I'll read about like on some website and be like, what the fuck is they going on forever?
They're like roaches, man. You get rid of one and then like 10 more pop up. I get it.
Talk to me about roaches right now in the summer.
At a certain point, you just got to, you know, go Joe's apartment and just welcome the mess, you know? All right. So before we get started, Andrew, why don't you tell us a little bit about your Instagram page and what you do?
I just post shit that a lot of it's from stuff from when I was growing up. I mean, hence the name. It's just a lot of my personal junk. You know, I've been a collector since I was like 10. Started with Pez and then lunchboxes and then everything. So 40 now. So I mean, I've been collecting a pretty fucking long time. But I post a lot of stuff that you know, I wouldn't say I'm a hoarder. I mean, my wife might say I'm a hoarder, but I'm not. So I mean, I have a tendency to not throw away shit. So I fortunately have a lot of stuff that I can now that I post that, you know, it's from growing up. So I like to post a lot of retro junk.
A lot of it is kick-ass too, man. So many fucking cassette tapes I see you posting all the time.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of like throwback shit, dude. So
thank you.
All that stuff is like right up our alley, because Alan and I are in our 40s too. I'm 40, a little over 40, and Alan's the same boat. So like that's all shit that we grew up with too. So when I see you posting that shit, it's like, fuck, dude. How the fuck does Andrew still have this? You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, exactly. You know? Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think about all the shit that I've not even thrown away. It just went missing into the abyss. You know what I mean? Or yard sale shit. And like, now I'm like, damn, I could probably get some great money for all that shit. And not that at all, but like, just to even have it, knowing that it's all, you know, kind of making a comeback, if you will. So,
oh yeah, for sure. Like vinyl tapes, CDs, all that shit's coming back. It's one big circle. You know what I mean?
I got a record player for my birthday just recently, and I have some vinyl here at the house. So it makes it easy for me to listen to that vinyl now. But I was at the record store yesterday and I was like blown away at the prices of records, man. It is insane.
Oh, yeah. For new stuff? Yeah.
Yeah.
I still dig. I still go to the crates and dig at the local record store.
Yeah, I do too. I refuse to pay $30 for an album, so.
Right?
Dude, seriously.
Especially when you can find it for 99 cents.
That's fucking crazy.
Thrift stores is worth that too, man.
Mm-hmm.
Thrift stores, and then like I go to the swap meet. I try to go to the swap meet every once in a while. The one here locally on weekends, they got some cool shit. I've been planting some seeds with some of the vendors there, because a lot of them sell NES cartridges.
Oh, hell yeah. I got
mine on my desk.
There you go.
And, so I'll come up on stuff, right? Like there's this one vendor there. They have Bart Simpson versus the Space Mutants.
I have that in the other room. one of my favorites.
Well, they want $15 for it, right? So I come over one day and I'm like, hey, I'll give you $7. I got $7 cash. And the girl didn't even know how much it was. She's like, is there a sticker on it? And I was like, yeah.
It says,
she's like, well, what's you say? 15?
In the right light.
She's like, the best I can do is 10. And I was like, all I got is 7. And she's like, no, I can't do it. And I was like, all right, cool. So the plan is to go back, same vendor. Hey, you still got this. I offered you 7 last time. You want to take it now? And hopefully they say yes.
Oh, I thought you were about to hold it up.
No. I was getting ready. I was like, okay.
Dang.
I was just letting you
know. Fucking see it.
Although I will say I went so at the record store yesterday, Alan knows this, they do have a section of used DVDs and Blu-rays, and I would love it if they had VHS, but they don't. And so I picked up a few DVDs while I was there. So while I was there, I got Pan's Labyrinth for $1. Oh, yeah.
That's a good one.
I got Predator for $1.
The original.
Yeah. And $2, and I didn't mind paying the premium on this, I got a movie called Cyber Tracker.
I've never even heard of that.
Looks promising.
Same, which is why I bought it. Because look at the cover. It looks like something I would watch.
Don the Dragon Wilson?
Mm-hmm.
You know if it's got the dragon in it, it's got to be like at least worth an extra dollar.
He's
asking. Oh, yeah. Take my money. That's great.
With an attitude. Yeah, and it's got some like weird shit, like face removal robot shit on the back. So I'm like,
I'd buy that for $1.
Or two.
I'm sold.
Is that from RoboCop?
It is.
Buy that for $1.
Yes. I said that intentionally because I'm going to talk about RoboCop tonight because I swear to fucking God, this movie takes place in New Detroit.
OCP. Or like
Hope City, which is where Hobo with a Shotgun took place. I would not be surprised if all three of those movies were in the same fucking universe. You know what I mean? Because these movies are wild. Okay. So rather than just like being around the bush, let's talk about what movie we came to talk about, and that is Street Trash.
I don't need this.
Are you tired of the same old routine?
My wife, my
busting your hump and getting nowhere?
This just ain't my day.
The boss, is he always on your back?
Nice, my ass belongs in your chair, not in your lap, which is where you keep trying to put it, you bastard.
The wife,
you know,
and the kids.
Is that right?
They never listen.
I hate to see him pissing his life away in them goddamn computers.
Do you ever feel like forgetting the whole thing?
You think I got it easy?
Well, now you can.
I'm talking about life!
Drop out and join the ranks of the few. The filthy. Trash.
I got my own place, a condominium.
Where else can you live for free? And eat for even less? Well, be forewarned. Freedom has its price. Yes, there's always a snake in the Garden of Eden.
What you got for me today?
Today, Tenafly Viper. $1.
Here's to you, pussy. Don't drink my Viper!
Watch.
What's the matter? You can't hold your liquor, huh?
It's easy to find us. We're all over the place. Street Trash.
It's right in the name, dude. It's right in the name. This movie is insane. Andrew, tell me how you came across this movie.
So, I honestly saw it. I was about 13 or 14. Like, my best friend and I, we used to, in a video store in our town that was like in walking distance. We'd either walk or we'd skate there. And it was cool. It was in the back of a hardware store. So, you know, you guys remember, like, you know, 25, 30 years ago, everybody was trying to cash in on the home video market. So fucking everybody, you know, grocery stores were selling tapes, man. So we would go there for two reasons. One, because it was like, you know, pretty close to our houses. And two, because we had a friend whose older sister, she worked there. And she would let us rent fucking anything. I remember renting The Mutilator, Faces of Death. I think at one point we rented Debbie Does Dallas. She didn't give a fuck. So we were like, you know, 13, 14, 15, bringing up whatever we wanted, and she didn't even bat an eye. So I remember my best friend and I had a ritual. We'd like, Fridays, we'd stay at my house. Saturdays, we'd stay at his, like middle school through pretty much all of high school. We'd get a couple movies. And I remember Street Trash pretty vividly because when we decided to rent it, we were getting like a big snowstorm. So we're walking to the store and it started to snow, but it was, you know, very light. And my friend was like, all right, we're going to get fucking snowed in. Let's get like four or five movies. All right, cool.
Yeah.
So bad taste, already seen it. You know, Mutilator, already seen it. What about this? What about Night of the Living Dead? Yeah, all right, classic, might as well. And then, you know, we got the Street Trash. Anybody who's ever seen the box art, it's fucking beautiful. So naturally, you know, let's do it. But I remember when we finally got home, the snow was coming down pretty heavily. And we would have sleepovers. We'd spend them in my basement, my parents' basement. And I remember my dad, he must have yelled down to us like three or four times, hey, get out and fucking shovel the driveway. And he had to go to work the next day. And so we'd have to go like keep up with the snow. So we must have paused the movie like three or four times throughout the night and rewound it. So finally we ended up getting to watch it, you know, all the way through probably. I mean, you know, this is 25 or so years ago. We finally ended up getting to watch it all the way through eventually. But it blew my mind. I mean, for real, it blew my fucking mind.
Hell yeah.
Good one.
So Alan and I live in two different states, but I went to visit him and we were in the car getting some food when you and I were texting with each other and you sent me, you're like, hey man, check this one out, Street Trash. And I was like, let me watch the trailer. So we're sitting in the drive-thru and watching the trailer and instantly I just turned to Reedy and I'm like, dude, we have to do this movie. Like we have to do this movie.
Nice. That's great.
We keep this running list of like movies that we're going to watch in the future. And this one constantly keeps coming up. And he's like, we can't do it without Andrew. We just cannot do it without him. So like aligned, you were able to go ahead and like,
I appreciate it.
Get yourself That's all cool. like hyped on caffeine to stay with us. So we appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm like fucking seeing double. I get up pretty early. I was like, yeah, fuck it. I'll stay up. I'll stay up later. Talk to these guys for a while. Yeah.
Well, come on,
worth your while.
Yeah, of course.
Well, we'll try not to be up too late.
No, we're fine, man. Don't worry about that.
Nice. All right, so why don't you tell all the weirdos at home what this movie's actually about?
So there are a bunch of hobos, and they kind of fucked up. They're all alcoholics.
I thought everything about this movie was fucked up.
Yeah,
I know, all of it's fucked up.
They're all homeless for the most part. They're all alcoholics. Everybody can hates each other. Like right. No one's nice at all. There are no good people in this movie. Even in the one scene where like the dude in the suit got dripped on and he was walking down the street with that girl.
Uh-huh.
When the dude ran away and then the cop came over and then the girl was like talking to the cop and like trying to get him to help him. Even that interaction was aggressive right off the bat.
Yeah, there's no good. There's no good in this.
There's not one. Yeah, nice person or orderly conversation in this whole movie.
So, I made my wife watch it like a couple of years ago, and I remember going into it. I was like, you know, and she's cool with all like the fucked up movies and everything. She had, so I remember saying, you know, and I'm not going to spoil it, not yet. At least you know we'll get to the fucked up scenes. I remember saying to her, being like, you know, going into this, yeah, it's pretty rough. And she'd look at me and be like, wow, yeah, you know, someone wrote this script. Someone put this on paper and went, you know, this will be a good idea. The final execution be fucking great. Like, let's do it. You know, so
that idea, that ideal or idea or whatever you want to call it, that mindset always blows me away. And yeah. Think sure. about that when there's like garbage, like straight trash shit, like bad reboots, remakes, whatever, you know. I often like turn to my wife and I'm like, you know, somebody had to sign off on this. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Somebody read this and was like, fuck yeah, bro, let's do this.
I talk about it all the time.
Well, I'm it's gonna say as much as like if I looked at this script on paper, like the way it was written, the way that the characters interacted with each other, the jokes, the banter, it was well fucking written. I don't care. Like, I'm not gonna knock it.
It's a dark comedy, so there are parts in it where you're like, so is he fucking, are they serious?
Yeah,
100%. You're right.
I think to Alan's point, like it's structurally, it's done really well. Even the cinematography, I thought this was shot.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah,
for sure. Absolutely.
It's fucking amazing. But the content of the words, right, is
yeah.
Yeah,
it's rough. It's like if my cousin Vinny didn't have a fucking like a rated R rating on it or something. Like, this is what it would sound like. Everyone sounded like fucking Joe Pesci, like the two Utes.
There was towards the end. Okay, because here's what happened for me. So I went to put it on last night, and I'm kind of recovering from an injury. So rather than continuing to take the medication that I have, I was like, fuck it. I'm gonna eat an edible, and I'm gonna watch this movie, and I'm gonna chill out. And like, I don't know, 10-20 minutes into it, I ended up passing out, dude. I was so pissed off. I woke up and I was like, fuck. So I watched it today, and in the end, I was thinking to myself, I should have wrote notes, and like, I want to go back and capture all the funny ass, like little one-liners or like names that people call each other, especially Bronson, man.
Bronson.
Weird shit to call people, dude. It's so funny.
Yeah, he's the man. So this movie was 1987, right? Street Trash. Written and directed by J. Michael Moreau. It looks like this is like the only movie that he really had directed and written, and the only thing he really was even involved in until 2007? No, 2004, when he then picks up with Crash and starts getting into like really big things.
Yeah, yeah. I was also surprised to see that Bryan Singer was like a PA on the movie too.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to me, considering what Bryan Singer goes on to do with his professional career. And I'm always looking for that stuff, right? Like these little fucking off the shelf, nobody knows, cult classics. Like, if it wasn't for people like Andrew, I don't know that this thing would ever be on my radar. Mm-mm. And then to find like there's some, you know, some high power names attached to it in some way, shape, or form is like, dude, right on. It's not beneath anybody to do anything like this.
No, of course not. No. I mean, look at who the hell, it was the guy who did Bad Taste. Mm. He went on to do like the Hobbit. Did he do the Hobbit? And Peter Jackson.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
No, you're not.
That ending scene though was pretty dope. If I'm thinking of the same movie with the lawnmower and Bad Taste, isn't that how it ends?
Do the aliens come? Don't they open up like a fast food joint?
Yes.
And they're feeding people to people. They're making the burgers out of people. It's been like 30 years since I've seen that movie. My memory is not too good.
I don't think Bad Taste is the same movie that you're talking about, Emily.
It isn't.
I think you're talking about Dead Alive.
Yes.
Dead Alive. Yes. Oh, yeah.
That's
Dead Alive.
That's the one with the lawnmower.
The ending lawnmower.
Where they use like...
Yeah.
I remember at the time, some fun fact that like it held the record for the most amount of fake blood used in any one particular scene.
Yes.
And when I heard that before I watched the movie, I was like, yeah, are we watching it now? Like, put it on. Let's go.
I'm going to have to dig that out. I haven't seen that since I was a kid. I completely forgot about Dead Alive.
You were right, though, with Bad Taste. I was totally mixing the two movies up. Absolutely mixing them up. For some reason, I think of Dead Alive as like Peter Jackson's first one, and it's not even close.
Wasn't Bad Taste his first movie?
According to IMDb, at least, Bad Taste. So Andrew got the point, man.
Thanks.
That's why we have people like Andrew on the show, because we don't know what the fuck we're talking about.
Neither do I.
Make it. Okay, so this one, Street Trash, is basically, I was having a hard time pinning down what this movie's about, because really there's kind of a couple things happening at the same time. And then I came to the conclusion that it's not really about anything. It's just these two things happening at the same time. Like, I don't know that there's like a plot or story per se. It's just some weird, cool, gross shit happening within the span of like a couple days.
I don't know, dude. Like, I think, like, I would say, all right, some asshole liquor store owner finds a box of fucking wine and is in the wall. It's called Viper. Decides to sell it for $1 apiece because all the hobos are drunks and have basically no money. So he can sell $1 a bottle, and then people start melting. That's and then there's shit with Bronson. With that dude who had wicked PTSD from now.
Yeah, totally, man. Yeah, the hooch is no good. It's actually, I'll call it poisonous, right? Because they drink it and immediately, it's not even a thing of like later. It's just like instantaneously, it starts to like, and not just make people sick, it literally melts people. And what I thought was really dope about the I'll call it transitions or the melting, is the way that it incorporates different colors, right? Mm-hmm. We see that with the first body melt, where there's a couple different colors. And then I was a little bummed because between the first melt and then like the rest of them towards the end, there's a pretty large gap, but it's so worth it in the end because everybody starts melting, man. It's
the melt scenes are what's so, because I remember, you know, going back to when I first saw it when I was a teenager, I remember sitting there and seeing the melt scenes just blowing my fucking mind.
Yeah.
You know, for a film that was filmed, you know, in the 80s. And I mean, it's not shot on video, but it's not like it's big production either. I mean, we're talking, it's kind of in the lower budget. So to have those kind of scenes, you know, the director had to get pretty creative to come up with shit, you know, and I have no idea what they possibly could have used to show all the blues. Actually, my wife today even said, she was like, why the fuck is everything pink and blue? It's because it's vibrant, because it's cool to look at, you know? So
I think also too, I don't know if it does it on purpose or not, but like, if you take a look at like the tone of the photography of the area, the city in which they live, the situation of all these people, it's very dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Their life's pretty terrible.
Yeah. It's pretty glib. Right.
Yeah. Everybody's dirty. Everybody's down on their luck. Everybody's mad at each other. Even when it's daylight outside, you still get like that gloomy, dark vibe to the movie. So that when you have these body melt scenes, that shit really like pops out to me. Right. Those color combinations of like bright and dark, because it makes things just stand out, and it did it really well in this movie for sure.
That the first scene when that dude melts into the toilet, because you guys remember that scene.
Absolutely.
He sits down in like in this burned out, fucked up building, and he sits down on this, you know, toilet, sips, starts to melt, and then he fucking melts into the toilet, and they show him, and he's, you know, looking like Belial from Basket Case. But he's like blue coming out of the toilet, you know, and it's cool. And yeah. Like I said, when I was a kid and I saw that, it blew my fucking mind.
Hell yeah.
It's awesome. Dude,
I think if I would have saw this as a kid, I'd be right there with you, man.
100%.
I feel like bad that of all the shit that I did see growing up, this wasn't one of them, man. And I'm like, how did I, either I don't remember my sword carrying it or what, or I don't know, but like I'm at least I'm here now because it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I appreciate it in a different way, but like, to your point, if I was a kid and I saw this for the first time, I'd have been like, this is my most favorite movie in the whole world.
Yeah,
but it's better late than never, man. No, so
true that. So as far as walkthrough goes, I mean, it's really kind of cut and dry, right? So we open up and we see our main character. His name is Fred, played by Mike Lackey, who has a little bit of a presence on Instagram. I sent him a couple messages. We'll see if he responds.
Do. So if the guy who played Fred is true, all right. So look. So I mean, we're all roughly the same age. So you guys know. So in the 70s and the 80s, chest hair was such a fucking huge thing, right? Women were into chest hair, men had chest hair everywhere. This guy, if you guys remember, he had chest hair for days throughout the whole movie, with his shirt down in here and his chest here. I need to know why. Did the director think it was gonna attract, you know, female viewer? I don't understand.
It looked like street
bizarre to me.
That's true. And there is a lot of bush in this.
There was. Movie,
it's nuts. Yeah. It's crazy.
Literally, because like in the first 10 minutes, right, we get this chase scene where our main character, Fred, stole some money from
bush.
And they're, you know, they're being chased, and he runs through this building that happens to be on fire, and he goes through this room where these two kids are fucking, and they both get up to run out. And normally where I would expect just to see female parts, we've got this dude's big ass fucking cock just flopping in the wind as he's running down the stairs. I'm like, oh, okay, no hold part. That's what this movie's gonna be. Let's go.
Sets the tone for the rest of the movie. It was like there were 10 minutes in and the shit's already happening. And that just sets the tone for the rest of the film.
I've got it on right now in the background. I'm 12 minutes in and it's already on the toilet melting scene. So it's like,
oh yeah, there you go.
The first 10, 15 minutes gets you ready for the rest of the movie. And I got to say, the movie was like an hour 40, hour 45. It was a long movie, but you don't really feel it because there's just so much going on.
No, and you know something? And I remember thinking, you know, because the movie just sort of ends. And I remember thinking, okay, is there more? And then they kind of segue into, you know, remember the wiener kid from Frankenhooker? And he was in the Jerky Boys, you know, the kid that's in Street Trash. Anyhow, the movie just sort of ends. It just ends.
Well, I kind of like that about some movies, because I think a lot of movies drag it out in the end, or they don't know how to finish it. So there's this director, Sam Curtin. He's got a couple movies under his belt. The first one was Blood Hunt, then Slaughterhouse Killer, and then his newest one is Beaten to Death. And if you've not seen those movies, go and fucking check them out, or at least go back and listen to our episodes on them, because Dean Kirkwright, he's an actor in two of those three movies. We've made friends with him. He's been on the show. And then we got Sam Curtin on the show and we talked to them. And the one thing I told Sam that I really respected about his movies is they just fucking end. You know what I mean? Like,
fucking end.
You get to your point and then it's just done. Boom, roll credits. Get on with the rest of your life. And I was like, I like that, because some drag it out. They don't know how to finish it. It's just too long. Like,
I think that that's what it is. At least with Street Trash. I think that they ran out of film and they were like, yeah, fuck it. That's it.
I guess we're done now. Yeah, I guess we're done now. Okay, so Fred is he's a homeless guy, right? Young homeless guy. The movie opens with him stealing some money, running through the streets, running through the apartments, you know, trying to get away from the guys, the other homeless guys that are chasing him, who stole the $3 from.
$3.
Dude, hey man, $3 is $3 when you got $0 all the time. So
that's true.
So, but then, you know, he gets away and we end up seeing him walk into the liquor store where we meet Ed. I think Ed is the name of the guy that owns the liquor store, right?
The dude who's like in there with his shades
and his super 80s kind of bald, kind of mullet cut, you know, hybrid.
Yeah.
Ed
is the one who he's the liquor store owner. He finds the case of this Viper, wine or booze, whatever you want to call it. Kind of reminded me of Black Dynamite.
Leon St. James for Anaconda Malt Liquor.
With a delectable combination of the finest butters and hops, it's the only malt liquor that carries the seal of excellence from Uncle Sam himself. And when you pop the top, the panties drop.
Is that Anaconda Malt Liquor? The only malt liquor to be approved by the United States government?
That's right. Anaconda Malt Liquor.
There you go. And so he starts to sell it for $1, as Andrew mentioned, but Fred ends up stealing a bottle rather than buying it, and then just kind of taking a walk for himself. And this is where we start to meet like our cavalcade of characters, right? All the different homeless people, the people he interacts with. There's this scene where like they're all washing windows at a stoplight. Big dude with like a gas mask on, and then dirty. And I'm like, where is this place? Like, I know it's New York, but like, you're in New York, man, because like, it is grimy.
Brooklyn.
It's Brooklyn.
It is Brooklyn.
It's also 80s Brooklyn. It's not like it's before Dumbo was a thing, you know?
I gotcha.
So it's like extra.
Yeah. Before they clean things up a little bit.
Can we just talk about for a second, just how about where they live? So I don't know about you guys, but when I was a kid, I would have died to have had a fucking fort made out of tires and an old burned out car. I mean, they live in like a mansion made out of fucking tires.
Dude, okay. So we go from like seeing, you know, all the homeless guys wiping the windows and everything to the salvage yard, right? And this is where we meet the salvage yard owner, whose name is Frank, but they call him Shizner, right? Throughout the movie. Big fat guy, right?
He was in Toxic.
Yeah, he was. He was in a bunch of things, actually. He was the mayor of Toxic.
I think Class of Nukem High. Class of Nukem High, too. He played a piece of shit in every movie he was in. He was only in. Like,
he kind of reminds me of Fluffy, like a white version of Fluffy.
I get it. I can see it. Totally. So in there, he's got an assistant by the name of Wendy, who is of Asian descent. And again, really, like, up until this point, everybody's just yelling at each other, talking shit to each other, and not busting balls, but like literally talking shit to each other. And so, you know, again, I think the purpose is to really just kind of introduce everybody and who everybody is. But after a while, we cut back to Fred, and he ends up getting robbed by one of these homeless guys. and the bottle of booze gets stolen from him that he stole from the liquor store, and the dude drinks the bottle sitting on some toilet in a broken down fucking brickyard, and this is where we get this fucking awesome melting on the toilet scene.
Yeah, it sets the standard for practical effects right here. You know that you're dealing with some pretty good shit, in my opinion, at that point in time. Yeah.
It was really good, for sure, dude, for sure.
Absolutely.
Now, to Andrew's point, when we're at the salvage yard, we also do see that these homeless people live in the salvage yard. And I think at one point, maybe not this point, but at a certain point, they kind of show more in depth where they live, because one of them was just getting in the car, in a car. And I was like, okay, you live in a car in a salvage yard. But then when you come out through the other side of the car, it's like,
yeah,
spacious and built out.
Amazing. It's amazing.
And I was like,
it's amazing.
That's a dope spot, yeah, dude.
What 14-year-old me wanted, instead of going to pick apart to get all the parts for the cars, I wanted to just hang out.
Sure. Like, absolutely. I dreamt about it since I first saw the movie. It's just awesome. I mean, to play it, not to live it.
Let's start with the plane off and see where this goes.
Totally. Okay, so now that we've met all of our characters and we've got kind of a good idea of like where everybody's at, where they live, the whole nine, we cut back to one of the homeless guys. Actually, did they introduce Bronson at this point? I think they did. I think I'm missing that point where, like, at a certain point in the salvage yard, we get introduced.
He may have been introduced even in the window cleaning scene.
He never left the yard, man. He ran that place. Bronson is like, he's the big burly dude who is experiencing the Vietnam War PTSD. He's having his flashbacks. And he runs the salvage yard and like is the boss, if you will, of all the homeless people that live there. And because he's so brutal and so fucking murderous, nobody talks about Bronson outside of that place. And if you bring him up, they're quick to shut you down, right? Like, oh, I don't know nothing about nobody or whatever. Like, I don't want to talk to you about that. But this dude is insane, and he's just as dirty and grimy as the rest of them. And he's got this girl. Fuck, I don't remember her name. I don't think she had a name. Oh, Wynette.
Really dirty.
Yeah, really? Dude.
She was gnarly. Like, she was fucking gross.
Yeah, and in the first scene where we meet them, she's like, you know, pawing all over him. She's literally trying to get him the fucker, and he's like not. He's just like groping on her, and she was saying some weird shit, and I think the weirdest thing that she said to him was, kiss me on the mouth. And I was like, where else would he kiss you? Because you are gross.
Yeah. Everyone's just covered in dirt.
But she's
it's pretty gross.
Yeah, dude. I get the vibe that she's like the village whore, if you will. You know? Like, she was the only female that I saw kind of running around there.
Wendy.
Aside from Wendy, who actually works there. Yeah, and is
right.
Like clean.
Go figure.
Yeah. I know. So we cut back to one of the other homeless guys going to the same fucking liquor store. He buys a bottle of the hooch, and then on his way out, he runs into a cop. Like, I had no idea that this dude was a cop. He wasn't in uniform. I guess he just knew that he was a cop because he called him officer.
Bill.
Yeah.
Bill the cop. I think Bill. That's even what he's labeled. You know, if you go to IMDb, Bill the cop. Do you know that? I think that's his only film credit. Like, that's it. I think he just did street credit. That's it.
I wouldn't do anything else after this. I'd be like, drop the mic. I'm done.
Well, I don't know if he maintained it after the movie, but he was a cop in real life before the movie.
No shit.
Yeah. So I don't know if he was like a cop, then retired, and then did the movie, or if he was a cop when he did the movie, or if he maintained it afterwards. But I read somewhere that he was an actual cop.
That's wild.
Dude, there's all kinds of wild shit about this movie. Like the dude Bronson, the guy who played Bronson, yeah. Vic Noto, he got hired on 12 hours before he had to shoot his scene.
I was reading about how he like read scene by scene, never actually read the script.
I'll do you one better. He kept reading the script 3 months after the movie had wrapped. And he was like, I still don't know who Bronson is as a character. He's like, know what I was doing. I didn't know what like Bronson's purpose was or who he was. He's like, I just showed up and like ad-libbed most of my stuff, and like it worked, and they kept it, so it was all good.
And it was the 80s. Everybody was probably all fucked up on coke anyway.
I was going to say, dude. Yeah. This movie's made with cocaine money, man. Okay. So this homeless dude has the interaction with the cop. And then he breaks off to go into his own little hiding spot, which I thought was pretty dope. It was like I don't even know what you call them because I'm not from the East Coast, but it's like a stairwell or the patio of the apartment, like the home.
He's like hanging out on like his like fire escape.
The fire escape.
Fire escape. Der. Yeah, thank you. And he starts to drink his booze, and he starts to melt just the same. Now they don't show him melting, which I was like, oh, come on, I want to see it, but. Because he's on the fire escape and it's like slotted rails, all that shit is dripping down, and then this fucking passerby gets hit in the face with all the ooze, and then his face starts to melt. He runs over to the cop.
That's the one of the dudes who wrote the script or Street Trash. Roy,
the dude that got like dripped on.
Look it up on IMDb, because if I'm not mistaken, that's actually him. I don't know the fucking
script. I tried.
Yeah. Yunks.
Frumks.
Frumks.
Frumkus.
You can't
call him Roy.
Frumkus.
Frumkus. Nailed it.
So that's Tuxedo walking by getting dripped on?
That dude. Go to IMDb.
It is melted business.
Yeah, I'm there. I'm there.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. He just went in there. Got himself all drippy.
Dude, I think that if I'm making this movie, there's no way I'm not in it. You know what I mean? Like, writer, producer, whatever. I'm watching what's happening. And I'm like, you got to put me in, coach. Like, I got to be part of this shit.
Alfred Hitchcock.
Take me in. Yeah. Let me do something.
I wrote it.
Why okay, so now that we...
I
know, right? I'm going to write myself into this.
At least like skateboard by and fucking like in frame.
Fat guy with beard. Yep, that's me. Clearly, there's no other fat guys with a beard.
You're hailing a cat. Let me just put the side of a cab down. Excuse me.
Okay, so now that we've got a couple charred homeless people, the intent for the cops is now that. Like, we got to figure out what's happening with this homeless people, right? And so Bill, the cop, is trying to get one of the other cops to... I got to tell you, the scene with the fucking... with the coroner, probably one of my favorite scenes of the movie.
He's going, check out my latest masterpiece, and he fucking throws a sheet up, and it's like, it's the way it's posed. He's like, are you serious? Come on. He's like sitting there eating a sandwich. It's absolutely bizarre.
Just that corner, I don't know what it is about him, but it just made me love that scene so much. It was...
It's awesome. It absolutely is. And that's where, like, the dark comedy comes into play in this movie, is like, you know, they're just like, hey, check it out, you know, I'm a coroner, but I'm eating, and you know, and I'm, check out what I did with this dead body, you know, it's sort of kind of funny, I guess. I mean,
so the new cop now that comes in to kind of meet up with Bill the cop is like, hey, I'll help you, because apparently they figured out like they need to talk to Bronson. Like, runs the homeless game, and the homeless are the ones that are dying out, so like, we got to go talk to Bronson. But the new cop is like, don't do that without me, because I know that dude. And like, but I thought it was funny, he was like, we're on pussy patrol tonight, he's so, you know, like busting hookers. And so I'll help you tomorrow if you help me bust hookers fair tonight. Trade. And I was like, that's a really fun way to, yeah, totally. And to put it that way. So now that's kind of what becomes the theme of the movie for like a large majority of it, which is us watching who these people are, how they live, and these cops trying to get a grasp on what is happening to the homeless people and all the different interactions between them. And like, I could go through it, you know, kind of scene by scene, but honestly, at the end of the day, what we get is like 40, 50 minutes of just like straight shit talking, ass kicking, chasing, like
just being winos. And
Yeah, seriously. And I don't, like, there's not a lot going on per se, but it's still enough to keep me interested. And the dialogue is so fucking funny, man. And I understand it's insensitive, right? But I think that's the point. I think if you look at how grimy this movie is, how everybody hates each other, they're all angry with each other. I think it's just someone's view and outlook of, like, where society was at that time and place in history. Yeah.
Well, we were saying it's grimy 80s New York. I mean, there's plenty of politically incorrect shit that they're throwing at each other in that movie. But I mean, you got to think completely different time. So I think you could get away with saying stuff like that back then.
Yeah. Well, the writer, Roy Fromkes, was, yeah, I feel like it's a piece of furniture I should be buying from IKEA.
Those are nice. You got to get it in the birch.
Okay. So he was quoted when he was talking to some publication called the National Board of Review. And he was quoted as saying about writing the movie, quote, "I wrote it to democratically offend every group on the planet."
I read that too.
"And as a result, the youth market embraced it as renegade work and it played midnight shows." And to that, I say, fucking
hell yeah.
Job well done, sir.
I tip my hat to you.
Yeah, 100%. No one is safe in this movie, man. The racial slurs, the fucking the discrimination, like the hate, everybody gets a piece of
trip out on,
in this movie.
Yeah, sure. Trip out on this.
Equal opportunity.
Yeah,
J. Michael,
for sure.
The director also. His parents owned a salvage yard. So, like, this was his dream. This was his playground as a kid. Yeah.
It's so easy.
No shit.
So, I bet he probably saw a lot of this type of shit going down, you know, and especially.
They just called it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Vendors. Not street trash.
Life.
There was like a scene where he was like, "He's black. No one will give a shit. It's all right." Like it's.
Yeah, that was more towards the end because Fred had eventually figured out that the booze is like melting people. So there was one guy that he like wanted to kill and he kind of posed it as like, "Oh, I'm going to make this guy rob me for my booze." And the black dude in the gas mask ended up coming and saving him and then getting the booze back. But he was like, "No, dude, give it.
Wizzy
take it." Yeah. And then he ends up getting knocked out with a fucking like lead pipe or some shit. And the dude picked it back up. And then Fred does that thing where, like, "I want you to do something, but I'm going to frame it in a way where I don't want you to do it." Like, you know, sarcastically. Like, "No,
please don't."
Yeah, dying for a drink.
My pants and everything.
And I think what he said was, "I haven't even drank anything, but I've been shitting
my pants." Come on.
Dude, I saw this video on Instagram. It was so funny, man. I sent it to my wife because we always talk about leaving work early. And it was like, "Hey, you want to leave work early? Just shit your pants." Where are they
going? Oh, yeah, that's a big enough jail for that. Oh, yeah, for sure.
I don't know. In that scene somewhere, like Fred's telling the other dude, like, "Don't worry about him. He's black. Nobody gives a fuck." Blah, blah, blah. I was like, dude.
But it was to save his life, wasn't it? Like, no reason to keep beating him. Like, nobody cares about him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Drink it. Fuck him. Can we just talk about, so if we're going to go back to Fred's friend, the big guy in the gas mask. You guys remember the scene where he goes into that grocery store? All kinds of old shit, man. Old Pepsi, old Keebler cookies, old Moses cupcakes. It's glorious to see all that shit from back then. On all those shelves. I mean, it's
totally amazing. Now it makes me wonder how much of that stuff you got in your house, Andrew.
If it was food product, it's long gone. I wrote that down.
Kept the box.
I'm dabble, so I mean, I got some stuff.
That seems crazy too, because he's just walking through, like he found a receipt on the floor and he's like, I didn't know what he was going to do with it. But then we find out, right? He's just going through the store and picking up shit and just shuffling them. Melons, and I mean
chicken,
melons, right?
Chicken, all kinds of shit.
Yeah.
So what got me was that old lady coming out of nowhere going, "What the fuck are you?" Well, she didn't say that, but she, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "What the fuck are you looking at, bitch?" All pink lady. I mean, again, that was the time. It was, you know.
And she grabs the manager, who's another black guy, right? So like when the manager comes to confront this dude, he's like, "Oh, what up, brother?" You know, like trying to build rapport with him. And the dude's like, "Nah, bro, you're stealing from me, dude." So he kicks him out.
And get out.
He grabs a paper bag, you know, throws it over his head and walks straight through the
place. And crashes through a window.
That's how you make an exit, man.
And he's fine, because you know something, if that happened to real life, he'd be cut to fucking ribbons. So right through it.
Yeah, dude, crazy. From there, we cut to like the first night scene of the movie. And this is in the junkyard where Bronson is with all his gang or his guys or whatever. You kind of get a feel for like the nightlife in the camp, if you will. And Bronson's like freaking out and he's like having some kind of flashbacks, but also like handling this knife. And I didn't catch it originally until like it's made out of a fucking femur bone, dude.
Human fucking femur bone.
Yeah, dude. I don't know what's worse, that or like the necklace of like
ears. I can't hear you.
You know what I mean? It's kind of like in that same vein, dude.
It's bizarre. And then they show like a flashback scene of him like cutting it from someone's leg and numb and fucking fashioning it out, making a point. I mean, it's. Who thinks, again, this goes back to what we were talking about, where somebody conceived this idea and put it on fucking paper and went, you know what? This is going to be great. This is going to work out. He's going to have a knife fashioned out of a human femur bone.
When they got him carving it, though, I couldn't help but notice. I was like, that's a carpet knife. Who the fuck would carve with a carpet knife?
Fucking reading.
I mean, if you're a bum, you need a knife. It is what.
You gotta protect yourself.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny how fucking Bronson sits in his little like throne of backseat like high throne. Above the other junk with his like Princess Leia slave like at his feet, you know?
The wench. The
yeah.
Whatever the fuck her name is.
Wendy.
I mean, she's real. She's like always, but throughout the whole movie, she's like scantily clad in dirty bra, dirty underwear. She was wearing like a shower cap, and she's always like screeching about something, yelling at him, yelling about this, yelling about that. I mean, nothing good comes out of her mouth at all.
Which is funny because he always has to remind her, like, you don't talk to me like that in front of the men. And then
defile
like
me.
Beat the shit out of me.
Like military, very military.
In front of the men.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't until the third time he brings that up that I finally realized, oh, it's his nom flashback. It's his, like, you know, it's my soldier.
They
really drove that home.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. They did. Because I think Bill the cop was also.
Yeah, we're not too far out.
That too,
I mean,
right?
You're less than a decade out from like the end of the war, right?
I mean, we're talking, what was it?
Yeah.
When did it come out? 87, Trash?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, those guys were still around.
And
you know,
have
in
that
the
influx
80s.
Of
so,
all the
I mean,
soldiers coming back with PTSD and, you know, dealing. And that
yeah, was for
maybe
sure.
Part of the street trash, like, that they're trying to, I don't know.
Yeah. I never really thought about that. That's kind of, yeah, all
right. Yeah, House did that too, right?
Absolutely.
And the horror movie House was also, you know, put it in Vietnam, the PTSD, before PTSD was even.
It was.
Before the show. What'd you call it? Yes.
R.I.P.
Yeah, dude.
I feel like I need to pour out some of my water because Richard Ball. R.I.P.
Oh, wait. Mine's something else in it. Seagram 7.
Ooh, nice. Okay, so we transition to the same night, and we see our boy Fred kind of walking the streets, and he comes through this alley, and this chick is like blowing chunks in the alley, right? Nice looking red dress. She's wearing like primp and proper. Like, she is not one of the degenerates, but she is drunk as fuck. And so she keeps him Nick, right? But obviously his name is Fred. So she's just so drunk, she doesn't know who she's talking to. And she's like, come on, dude, let's go fuck right now. And he was like, right here, like in the street? Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, sure. So he ends up dragging her off. Well, when he drags her off, we see some dude come out of the restaurant and starts talking to the bellboy, and it's Nick.
Yeah.
Nick is a stereotypical Italian mafia type dude, right? Talking shit to the bellboy. I love that. I love that kind of talk coming from the Italian mob bosses and shit, dude. I fucking love it.
Hey!
It's still cute. Like, they're so quick with their shit, too. I think that's the part of it that I really like. But it turns out that the girl that left with Fred is his girlfriend. So now we don't know what happened. But we see what happens, and that's Fred bringing her back to the salvage yard. Gets her all the way.
And the whole way, like, she's saying, like, I want to fill you all the way up in the back of my womb. Like,
she's saying, like, pretty fucked up. Yeah. Like, she's saying some pretty dirty things. Like, some pretty fucked up things.
Like, I was going to, like, oh, yeah, girl.
I definitely need to go back and like,
yeah,
fucking write down some of this shit. So he gets her in and eventually like ends up banging her, right? But like the whole time he's bringing her in, we see all the other fucking men, urchins or whatever you want to call them, all like lurking around watching this piece of meat he's like bringing through.
Bring the boys.
Yeah, 100%. So immediately after he's done banging her, he's like, I'm done with you. Like, get off of me, you know?
The fuck up.
Yeah, but at the same time, some other dude reaches in to grab her, and then they end up like pulling her out. Like, yeah, everybody likes a piece at that point.
I'm going to be honest, I fast forward through that part. It's pretty fucked up. It's a little bit too much. Well, when I watch it today, I fast forwarded through. It's a little bit too fucking much for me.
There are some scenes like that. I know I can be a little bit sensitive to that stuff sometimes. There are definitely some movies that I've just turned off, or have just kind of skipped through the scenes. This one wasn't too bad for me, just because I think given the like offbeat nature of the whole movie, I didn't take it too seriously, or at least I didn't interpret it too seriously. But
absolutely, because I think what happens is he finishes, rolls over, and she's like, nah, I'm not done. And all the pervs outside are like, hey, yeah.
They're all like outside, like ready to pounce.
She literally said,
yeah, she did.
More, please.
And then when she got more, she was like, not that more. No smooch, but too much.
Yeah.
Okay. That's too much.
Yeah. Okay. So then we cut to another scene where an old man, homeless dude's walking down the street. And some other dudes come up to him and like, they are ready to light this motherfucker on fire. Like out of nowhere, they're just like, we're going to light you on fire. But he gets saved because the pussy paddy wagon rolls around.
Yeah. They're on the look for the.
I mean, that's what it was, right? It's full of hookers. It's the pussy. They had a good little round up there. But they pick a man and they throw him in the back. And then it turns out that Bill, the cop, is riding shotgun. And he's like interrogating this dude because he wants to know who is Bronson, where is he? And the old man's like, nope, I'd rather die. I'd rather go to jail. Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Stitches.
100%. That old adage never dies. What else? So we cut to the next day and we're back at the salvage yard, and what we see is Schisner, the big fat guy who runs the fucking salvage yard, is like forcing himself onto Wendy, the little
$5
his assistant, right? And like, hold on. So this is the thing that got me, right? He's pushing himself up on her, and she's fighting him every which way. And he's like
900 pounds.
100%. And he's like, I'll give you a $5 bonus. And her response to that made me think, because she was like, $5? Is that all you think I'm worth? And in my head, I'm like, wait a minute. Are you pushing him up, or are you negotiating?
$7.50's got a deal.
Well, wait a second. Like, if we're talking $50, if we can raise the price, then maybe I'll be okay with it. But he's like, that dude is a fucking mountain. He is humongous. And fun fact is that dude, R.L. Ryan, he died like immediately early in life. I think he was early 40s when he passed.
44.
From a heart attack.
I mean, look at his size, dude. Yeah. 46.
He was 6'5".
That dude was
6'5". So like for as big as he was at 6'5", you're right. 400.
He was and that the woman, she's like maybe 40 pounds soaking wet. I mean, she's
totally.
He's just a mammoth of a man consuming her. So I mean, she's shit out of luck. There's nothing she can do to get this guy away from her. I mean, he's much bigger.
Yeah.
He ends up passing out on her. At or around the same time, he's like trying to pull his shit out. So I thought
he jizzed
like,
himself.
Out. He's like, ugh.
Yeah, because like the next scene, the dog comes up to his crotch and he's got a wet spot and starts licking his crotch.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I thought happened. But then, you know, to her point, she thought he had a heart attack and died on top of her.
She's like, oh, and no, don't die on me.
More afraid of the fact that he died on her than him trying to, like, rape her. Because I guess when the rape is over, you can get away from that. But if he dies on you, that's
it.
You're done, dude. You're smothered and done. Like, no one's coming for you. Sorry. Yeah.
That dude, and again, he was like 900 pounds, so she was going to die under his corpse. Like, she would just die under there. There was no way she was pushing them off.
She would have figured it out. She was that big. It out. I have confidence.
She would have eaten her way through them.
She did.
He told her to do that too. That's so
let me fucking chew my way out of this.
Okay, so he ends up getting off of her, leaves, and he starts walking the yard or whatever. And that's true too. Hey-o. He ends up down by like the lake or the river or whatever, and he finds a dead body there. And I swear to God, the moment he looks over and sees that dead body,
and he pummels it,
I already knew what was happening.
Like, he toyed with the idea too. Like, he's like, should I? I don't know. He's smoking a cigarette. He's like, well, you know what? Fuck it. Flicks his cigarette.
He's singing a song. Like, if I could be with you for just an hour tonight, if I were free to do whatever I wanted.
It's so fucked up.
Okay, so what they do is they show him, like, walk over to the naked dead body, pull apart,
like, spits on his hand,
cuts to something else.
That's one of those, like,
God, we're, I was like, thank right, God, right. We're moving on from that scene. But the next thing that comes up was just as wild, right? So we're back in the junkyard. Bronson hits up Fred for whatever reason, and he's like, got his knife to his throat. And just as he's about to fucking stab him, Bronson starts getting pissed on.
So the little spot in the wall.
And here we go.
And
here we go.
I don't know if he cut it or if he just pulled it.
He pulled dick right off.
This dude's dick right off his body. 100%.
Right off.
And it was a clean cut.
I'm like, oh, that's fuck. All. He ripped the dick off. That's the end of that, right?
No.
It's not. But wait, there's more.
The funnest and most wild game of hot potato that I've ever seen in my whole life. It was like they are literally playing keep away with this dude's cut off cock. It's so funny.
And they're not afraid to show the close-up of it, to show the savage way it was ripped from the body.
Somebody was like carrying it.
He does like a full catch. It's the dude whose dick was ripped off. He tries to do that whole, like, Odell Beckham catch. Like,
there's a scene, there's a part in that scene where, like, the dick goes flying through the air in slow motion, and you just see it kind of, like, turning, like, all around. And I swear there's, like, mint and dirt and, like, all kinds of stuff. Oh, my God, dude, it's so good.
But, like, why are we not questioning the fact that suddenly Bronson has fucking superhuman strength?
I've never tried to pull a dick off.
I mean, literally Yank pulls it off. I mean, that's kind of fucked up. I mean, he was gonna be able to.
The only thing that I can think of is, like, these guys are so grimy and dirty and so, like,
untouched. Melt it off.
Yeah, kind of like that scene in Always Sunny where, like, Charlie's teeth just, like, pop there's out. So much, like, he just pulls them out.
There's so much dirt on the dick. It was like grip tape.
Good reach. Okay, so now we cut to the police station, and the Italian mobster dude, Nick, is there talking to Bill the cop, and he's got the bellboy with him. And it was so funny because the bellboy's just ratting on this dude left and right, and Bill the cop's like, dude, I can't protect you outside of this place, so, like, why are you ratting? And he's like, don't I get, like, witness protection or something?
The mob boss.
He's, like, saying the most, like, fuck. Like, he's, like, saying the most, like, wretched shit to this guy, like, thinking he's all good. He's like, I got news for you, by the way. You're walking out here. He's going to fucking kill you.
Well, they're there because they needed to come identify the dead body that was found by the junkyard. And it was his girlfriend, that dude, the chick that Fred had taken back, fucked, and then let the rest of the guys kind of have their way with her. So he was there to identify the body. And so now, you know, Bill the cop is even more invested. So this is where we see this random dude, right? The next scene is this random dude in this fucking sports jacket roll up to the graveyard. And as he's, like, walking through some of the area, we see Fred walk into the bathroom to take a piss. And it's that whole thing where, like, it's a wall full of urinals and Fred's at one of them. And this dude can pick any fucking urinal he wants, but he picks the one directly next to Fred, dude.
It's like that scene in Harold and Kumar. Is this your special bush? Huh?
Oh, yeah.
I just don't want to get fucking stabbed tonight.
Nice pubes. This guy ends up, like, turning and talking to Fred, and he's like, hey, can you do two things at once? And I was like, okay. They're both standing there holding their dicks, and he's asking him if he can do two things at once. Based on everything else I've seen in this movie, I think I'm prepared for anything that comes after whatever he just said.
Well, you made it this far in this movie, and it's as fucking grimy as it is. I mean, would you be surprised? I mean, come on.
That's what I'm saying. I was like, I think I'm good with whatever comes of it. You know?
Sure. You're already prepared.
So he tells him, he's like, yeah. Fred's like, yeah, I can do two things at once. He's like, good. We'll start saying your prayers. And then, like, he goes to, like, try to kill him. But Fred gets the jump on him, punches him in the cock, and runs away. And by the time this dude comes out to chase Fred, this is where Bill the cop shows up. And they proceed to get, well, the Italian mob guy in the sport coat pulls a gun on the cop. And the cop's like, hey, do you want to, like, go down, like, in a battle? Like, do you want to die in battle? Or do you want to, like, spend some time in jail? And the mobster dude's like,
yeah, let's rock.
Fuck it. Let's do it. And they proceed to fight. So I'm going to stop there. And I'm going to let Andrew pick. You've been fucking itching.
Okay. So, luckily enough, it's not the most fucked up scene in this movie. But, you know, they go at it, and they fight, and Bill the cop ends up killing this guy, drags him back into the bathroom, and proceeds to stick his fingers down his throat and puke on his dead body. So, you know, and again, like I said, it's like, this is, it stayed with me. I remember seeing this as a kid and being like, what the fuck? Was that really necessary? Again, goes back to someone wrote this in the script and went, all right, after you kill him, stick your fingers down his throat and fucking puke on him.
Yeah, 100%.
It's bizarre. Was it necessary?
I rewound it, actually, because I was like, what's happening here? Did he drink some of that stuff and is like, is turning too? And then, no, he just fucking threw up on him.
Because the throw up looked just like the melt. It looked very similar. And I was like, oh.
They probably used the same gunk that they were using for... The melting effects,
which is incredible. I fucking love it, all of it, the practical effects, so fucking good, man. They really did a good job at kind of making all that stuff pop out, look gross, slimy. We talked to one special effects artist, and he said, you know, one of the tricks about making it look good is keeping it wet, making sure it's always like that slimy-ish, and they fucking bring it in this one.
Yeah, it's wet. Yeah,
isn't that the most bizarre thing, just to fucking throw up on somebody, dude?
And then he sticks and just barfs on his dead body. It's fucking bizarre. And my wife, too, when she watched it for the first time, she was like, can you rewind that? Can I see that again? Wait a second. Like, just like you, Paul. Because it's fucked up. Fucked up.
Totally. All right. So from there, Bill the cop is just kind of hanging around, right? He's trying to get the lay of the land. He does realize that Bronson is there. So
wait. As he's leaving, there's this one line when Frank Schnitzer, Pat Ryan, big fucking dude, he's like chasing after the cop, and he's like, hey, any you guys got any leads about that missing girl, like looking for more info? And he makes some comment, he's like, no, but like the third to last guy that she slept with had syphilis.
Yeah, because he's like, hey, can you identify who semen that is? Asked them, like,
the cop was like, oh, we found semen in her, and he's like, oh,
he's like, well, wait a minute.
And then he's like scratching his nuts after he talks about like the third to last guy. Like, how do you know it was the third to last guy?
Yeah, exactly. So wandering around, Bill the cop ends up coming up on Bronson, and they proceed to fight, and it's a pretty dope fight. I gotta say, I think Bill the cop is like almost as big as Bronson. Like, these are burly ass dudes, man.
Yeah, they're refrigerators,
huge, man. Dude, like that scary, big, thick type, you know? Fucking Bill the cop
rugby
takes
players.
That. Yeah, totally. He takes that fucking femur bone knife in the back and still, you know, puts up a good fight against Bronson. But in the end, Bronson gets the best of him, and he gets murked.
He chokes the life out of him, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
And it was funny because that knife was in his back, and at one point, like, Bill the cop fell backwards. And that fucking the camp whore was there, so she was like kicking the knife into his back, and I was like, oh dude, how can you even keep going like that, man? I would imagine that shit would take you out.
Yeah, but when he picked up that freaking whore and threw her, like, he had her straight above the head and just smashes her against the wall.
Toby! Yeah. Yeah.
And he had a grip on her, too. Like, if you see the way his hand is holding her leg, like, from behind her leg, like, he had a good grip on her. So you know...
He's a fucking
beast. Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah. He was a fucking beast. He's huge.
You were going in. If he got you, that was all there was.
No one's, you know, fucking with him is a mistake.
Yeah. Totally, man. Totally.
Plus, he was all, you know, PTSD riddled from numb, so he's so fucked up.
Yeah,
so he's so fucked up. Plus, he's a dinosaur of a man. It's a mistake fucking with him.
So, Fred goes back to the liquor store, wants to pick up another bottle of booze.
I mean, it's a buck.
Yep. I mean, why not? Is. Yeah, totally. And then he comes back to the junkyard, and he hooks up with one of his homies, who's a big fat guy, right? This is, I call him the boy in blue, because blue shirt, blue pants, overalls.
Yep.
And Holly. And Fred sees this dude drinking.
Holly, I believe.
Yes. Okay. I just got to point something out to you, Andrew. We watched a movie a couple of weeks ago called Howl, and in Howl, there's a big fat guy on this train. Who's just like stuffing his mouth full of food and like he dies in the bathroom taking a dump. And his name was Paul.
The way to go.
And his name was Paul. And then here, the big fat guy, his name is Paulie. I'm like, come on, man. I can't escape that shit. Okay. So as Paulie is sitting there fucking drinking this booze, he starts to swell up almost like the girl from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, where she turns into a blueberry.
I was actually going to say that.
Violet.
You turn in Violet.
Yeah,
Violet.
Yeah, exactly.
Violet Beauregard. I was thinking it was Monty Python and the Meaning of Life, when the dude is like, eats so much and he's like, would you like a wafer? It's merely wafer.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I can't.
I don't remember.
Okay.
Okay. Well, there is a funny story that kind of includes wafers regarding this scene, because they, as they were making the movie, were looking for like sponsorship, more like product placement, you know, like, hey, we'll put a Coke in the movie and you give us, you know, a certain amount of money to do it. And So they're looking for sponsorship, right? And they can't get anybody to sign off. And I don't know if it's because they saw dailies or they read the script or whatever, but like, I don't know. They just couldn't get anybody to sponsor. So there's this, I read this funny piece of trivia here. It says, the producers were unsuccessful in getting product sponsorship for the film. The only company that was interested was the manufacturer of Drake's Cakes, which would send the cast and crew a box of snacks every week. Now, the movie took 13 weeks to shoot, so I'm assuming 13 weeks of Drake's Cakes. But by the end of the three-month shoot, everyone had eaten enough of the snacks that when it came time to do this scene where the fat bum explodes, the fake stomach was filled with all the boxes and boxes of the Drake's Cakes.
No shit.
Yeah.
That's now, a pretty cool bit of trivia.
I gotta say, this was probably one of the coolest death scenes or melts or whatever you want to call it. Because he just swells up so much and then just fucking explodes everywhere, dude. So good.
Yeah. Meat everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
But it's at this time where Fred's like starting to do the math. I just saw this guy drinking the Viper and then he fucking blew up. Is it the Viper? Because he was about to take a swig on that shit. So this is where he's like, I'm going to go tell Ed at the liquor store, but runs into this dude named Wiz.
Wizzy.
Yeah. And this is the dude that ends up beating the shit out of him and taking the Viper. The scene we were talking about earlier where the black dude in the mask comes to save him.
And earlier he stole the $3 in the opening scene
from this guy. That's right.
He's like a prick though. Like, you're not like, not to wish death on anybody, but I mean, he's a fucking asshole. So when he's all like, please, no, I need it. I've been shitting my pants. I need it. Don't take it.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, and then And then his friend's like, "I got your booze," and he's like, "No. Let him drink."
Yeah, and I think it's fitting that this dude die the way that he died, because, like, this is where we get, like, the first kind of full-body view of a melt. Because the first one was in the toilet, and we see it kind of melt into the toilet, so you don't really see the bottom half. The second one was on the fire escape, and we don't see that one at all. You just see the drippings. And then the third one was the big fat guy. You just see him explode. But this dude actually fucking melts. And I think...
it's the fucking lottery. It's...
yes.
Oh, 100... dude, yes. A million times over. And, like, I'm wondering if, like, they gave him such a horrible death because of how horrible of a person he was. You know what I mean?
Because he's just such a prick.
Yeah, yeah. It's karma, bro. It's that viper karma.
I actually thought it was pretty dope because, like, as you mentioned, like, everybody dies slightly different and, like, has even different colors, so it's like it affects everybody differently. Like, one dude blows up, another one just melts. Like, so it's kind of a crapshoot on how you're gonna go out. But this dude, he looks like Freddy Krueger before he
his whole body. They show, and then there's like that fucking close up of his whole body just all mangled and melted into form. I mean, it's fucking awesome.
Yeah,
there's just a
badass scene where they just show the outer meat of the body just against the wall as it slides down to the floor and just, and like the head separates from the body. It was well done.
Oh,
it's rad as fuck. It's just awesome.
Yeah. Well, Fred fucking ends up jamming out after that, makes it over to the liquor store, but not in time because Ed ends up drinking a bottle for himself and he runs out. And he's just starting to melt in the middle of the fucking street in front of his store. And then, like, Fred is freaking the fuck out. So he doesn't even stick around for it. Yeah.
He drip on me like 1,000 times and he's fucking dripping on me. Don't drip on me, man. Don't fucking drip on me. He's like covered in this orange goo.
Yeah. But it's cool because Fred takes off. And then when they cut back to the liquor store, it's this scene where it's just big ass puddle on the sidewalk and you see like the upper half of Ed just like trying to crawl away. It was like, oh, at least he's still alive.
What I didn't get is in that moment, why did Fred not run into the liquor store and just be
able to rob the whole place?
I thought the exact same fucking thing, dude. Free for all.
Yeah. I'd April 29th, 1992.
There you go. Just lock the door behind you and like, you're good, man. On a good ass bender. Okay, so now we're back to fucking Bronson, who's like whittling down his fucking knife or sharpening it up, and this is where we see another fucking Vietnam flashback to a younger version of himself, where he's just I think this is the scene where he's making the bone knife.
Yeah,
I think it is too, because he's like cutting a leg and he's like pulling it out. He's like, all right, this is my trophy. Let me ask you this. How the fuck did that guy get that back home? What's up with that? Did he stick it up his ass? I don't understand it.
It was the 70s, man. You just put it in a duffel bag. Isn't that how the heroin trade went down? Was they just brought things back in coffins or whatever?
I don't know, man. Like, I don't even try to pretend to understand all that shit those guys went through.
That's a good point. Dude.
Nobody gave a shit. I want to bring this guy to the souvenir. Is it a bone? Yeah. Yeah, all right. That's okay.
Wasn't it on Dead Presidents when he was trying to bring home a head?
Like, yeah. Head? Yeah.
Carry it around the fucking head. Mm-hmm.
Before they made him bury it? Yeah. So, I mean, there's some crazy shit going on back then.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody cared back then. There was fucking anarchy.
So now back at the junkyard, we see Bronson arguing with the wench, and he has, I don't know, I think I missed it, and I missed it again, but Bronson ended up with a bottle of the Viper. I don't know how he got it, but he had it, and he was about to take a drink, and the wench was like, oh my God, you're fucking holding out on me? Like, what the hell? You never share the good stuff with me. So she just grabs it and starts to drink it, and immediately starts to melt, and obviously... this is the first female melt that we see. So what are the first things to melt? Her fucking tits, dude.
The boobies.
Yeah, man.
And let me just say that it was like saints be praised. She's so fucking brutal. You know, and it's funny to me because you figure that she would have died like way early. Like, we're like, this is like an almost 2-hour-long movie. So like, you would have thought that she would have died like way, way before this because she just sucked so much.
Yeah.
But, you know, what can you do?
So at the same time that he's dealing with her body melts, One of the characters that we haven't really talked about, I don't remember his name, but he is Fred's little brother. Do you remember his name?
Yeah. We haven't talked about him.
No, we haven't. I mean, there's really not much to talk about other than the fact that he kind of lives with Fred, and their dad was a Vietnam vet, and like you get the impression that they're just like the dad's just gone. They don't really talk about what happened to their parents.
I think his brother, like his their father was touching him, or he was because he said something. There's a line where Fred's like, blah, 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 when you were doing the backstroke in his balls, and then it just kind of ends there, and they don't go back to it. So it you know, I think that their father was like touching him or something fucking terrible. You know, so,
brother's situation.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think his name is Kevin, Fred and Kevin.
That sounds right.
And Kevin's like crushing on Wendy, the assistant in the junkyard.
She is too, though.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And
she's like, damn, your dirt looks good.
I'm gonna clean you up real nice.
Oh god.
But she ends up taking him into the trailer to
considering she's like the only clean person in the whole movie.
Yeah.
But you know what, but again, that's not saying, because I feel like she's kind of greasy looking, you know. She's kind of like, she looks like she smells. I mean, she just kind of, she looks like she might have, you know, there's an odor. I'm not saying that it's necessarily bad. I'm just saying that, there's something that might, you know, there's something about, and maybe for me, it's, I think that maybe it might just be her mullet. I mean, a mullet is just so righteous. She's greasy. Yeah. She's not as dirty as, Dirty Denise, but I mean, she's crazy.
That's true. Maybe by my contrast, I'm like, maybe she's doable. But you're right.
All right. So as they're about to get down and dirty, fucking Bronson walks it, like rages in, dude, and starts. He breaks up the party and he starts chasing Kevin through the junkyard, and he's coming after him, and they end up giving chase, kind of running around, nothing really happening other than trying to get away from each other. But they end up in this situation where he grabs him and is like starting like to kind of wail on him, but then his brother comes to save him, right? Fred shows up to help him, and so Fred starts getting the shit beat out of him. And I think at one point Bronson had like picked up Kevin and like threw him across the room
like a fucking rag doll.
Yeah.
He even randomly killed some other dude that just was like working there.
Just happened
there.
To be like, there. Yeah,
and he's like,
he's not a guy you want to fuck with. He's a fucking beast.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah,
and like Fred was trying to get away from him at one point, and like threw the Viper on him, and you see like his like cheek just like melt up. Yeah. So as they're fighting,
like, what the fuck did you do to my face?
Yeah, dude. That's the meal ticket, bro.
The moneymaker.
Seriously. Okay, so when Bronson picks up Kevin and chucks him across the room, he lands on some like nitrous tanks or like a helium tank or something, but these big ass industrial ones. And it's laying down in such a way where Kevin realizes, if I just like kill like, I don't know, the top of this thing or whatever, like it might just like shoot out. And I already knew what it was, you know, gonna do. I already knew what he was doing.
Everybody did.
It was lined up perfectly.
What I was obvious.
not expecting was how it fucking took out Bronson,
the
dude.
The fucking end result.
Oh my god. The thing fucking doesn't even take off his head. It just takes off like all of like his midsection down to like the middle of his chest. And all you see is like shoulders with just this big fucking gap of nothing, and all this blood and shit starts to like spew out, dude. It's insane.
Might be the best, my favorite effect of the entire movie.
Dude, it's pretty awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, I think what makes it dope is that one, the body looks awesome the way that it is, but the headpiece is still there, leaned up against the car, and the eyes are still moving around.
Still moving.
Yeah, he's still.
And you know that like that was probably like half the fucking budget to get this head of Bronson to still be kind of moving his eyes and his mouth a little bit.
Yeah. And then you've got the cylinder sticking out of the side of the van, still spewing air. Yep. Like, yep. Dude, it was awesome.
So let me ask this. Was I the only one who noticed that as that headpiece is leaned up against the car and Wendy comes running by and jumps over and they show the upskirt shot, like from the bottom up, that when she passes over the head, Bronson eyes, he smiles, right? He's like, yeah, I saw it.
He was like, wow, look at that.
Because earlier they'd made a point that she ain't wearing no panties.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Jonesing on.
It's funny you should say it. So there's a part where she falls and she lands on the ground in such a way where I thought to myself, like, do you think she was like, oh, wow, thank God I have so much pubic hair. It like softened the blow for me. But, you know, when we were talking about the beginning, like, there's hair everywhere.
Yeah, and there it totally was.
Everywhere. Man. So it's kind of like form of nest, and she just sort of falls on it.
It's so funny because as I was doing this, we did Night of the Demons, and I watched Bad Channels recently.
Nice.
Bigly in it. And there's this whole thing about how, like, they had to make this special attachment for her privates because they made her shave and then found out that it looked so crazy being shaved, like they couldn't deal with like seeing actual vag.
That was actually
acceptable back then.
That was actually,
like, no, you need to take some shit on.
That was actually for Return of the Living Dead.
Oh yes, that's what it was.
Yeah. Now, they did in Night of the Demons. She did wear like a cover, because that scene where she's in the liquor store bent over and the guys are just watching, like you see everything, right? She's just wearing this little G-string. So they put like a flesh colored skin patch so you don't see all the goods. But for Return of the Living Dead, they were gonna do it with the full bush, and then Dan O'Bannon was like, I don't know. I think it looks fine the way that it is. And then the art people were like, oh, well, let's see what happens if we shave it. And they shaved it. And they were like, oh, hell no. It looks way worse.
They're so scared.
They're like, no, patch it up. Sorry.
Our bad. Like, we don't know what to do it now.
Our bad. Our bad.
My bee.
Yeah.
You mean you can get some zombie curtains?
No one's used to that back then, unless it looks like you have a cat there, or there's a cat between her legs.
Yeah, but I still don't like, okay, like, I get, like, you're not used to that, but, like, they weren't keeping up the bush either, you know what I mean? That's just, like, that's just wild bush, man. That's just, like, fire hazard for sure, man. Anyways, to Andrew's point earlier, fucking Wendy jumps over the headpiece. Bronson gets his I got to see it. And then boom, cut to title card, street trash, the movie's over. It's like, all right, that was awesome.
What's this?
Oh, but it's not.
It's not. It actually is not. we are treated with a cutscene back to some house where the Italian mobster is there with the bellboy, and he's just talking all kinds of shit about how he's going to kill him for ratting him out earlier. And it's just some good commentary from then on at that point.
But it's definitely a good callback too.
But what was
to awesome, that kid talking shit?
Oh yeah, 100%. And like, again, I just love like how mafioso the Italian dude is. And I think the bellboy had the Viper on him, and he like saw that he had the Viper, so he was like, you're fucking holding out on me, you're drinking on the job, blah blah blah. And he's like, I'll salute or whatever, and he fucking takes a shot and then fucking that's it.
And he's like, I'm the John now. I fucking killed him. Get that ring off his hand before it gets all fucking.
And I might want that cane too.
Yeah, they're all calling dibs on his shit as he's like melting right in front of him.
He's melting into the floor.
Yeah.
It's good to be the boss.
Ah, man. What a fun fucking ride, dude. This movie was nuts, dude. I think I'm going to buy it.
Yeah.
I got to put it in the collection, dude. Maybe find a poster or something.
Yeah, it's definitely
so good.
I was looking on eBay earlier for I have a copy, like a repressed version of it on tape. Some dude made like handmade copies of like a big box, and I actually think I posted it on my Instagram. And but I was looking at like original, even X rentals are like 100 up and up on eBay.
Yeah, 125.
I guess they're pricey.
VHS, yeah. Street Trash Retro Release Video Big Box. VHS Rare Op Sealed Horror Lightning, $125.
Yeah, they're pretty pricey.
Oh, there's this cool poster. Either way, I mean, I think I'm damn, $200 for this VHS copy. I think I'm okay with the, but this has definitely got to go up on the wall. Well, fuck, man, dude. Thank you for putting this shit on our radar, and thanks for hanging out, man. I know it's late on, you know, your side of the world.
Had a lot of fun.
Good, thank man. You for having me. Oh, of course, man. Anytime, dude. You're always welcome on the show, dude. Just keep...
Anytime you want me on, anytime you guys want to, I'm here. It doesn't bother me staying up this late. I had a lot of fucking fun. So anytime you guys.
Yeah, we definitely got to keep pulling from your well, man. Cause you, just all the shit that you post and the stuff that you've suggested to us, video by, dude, you're 2 for 2 already. You know what I mean? Like, it's fucking awesome. So we got to keep it going.
Got plenty.
Sure. Yeah.
100%. Yeah, I got plenty. So.
100%. All right, man. Well, we'll let you go get some sleep.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for hanging out, guys. Brother. We'll talk later.
Bottle of booze. Here's my dollar. Suck my dick.